Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the May NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised, today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in a queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, could you read the open public meeting notice, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to Star Ledger and the Times and Trent at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Manera, could you conduct the roll call, please?
Yes. Chairman Terrence O'Toole?
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Sarlo?
Here.
Virginia Bauer?
Here.
Fred Dumont?
Here.
Aisha Glover?
Present.
Marcia Marley?
Here.
Jewel Antoine Johnson?
Present.
Robert Shimko?
Here.
Jameer Sermon?
Here.
Commissioner Marlene Caridi? Commissioner Robert Angelo?
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean LaTourette.
Yes.
Okay, State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera. Board, before you are the minutes from the April 12th New Jersey Economic Development Authority Board meeting for review and approval. I just want to remind everyone, when you make a motion or second, please state your name for the record. I'd like to request a motion to approve the April 12th board meeting minutes, please.
So moved. Angela, sorry.
I'm new at this.
Right, I'll go back to person, so I guess.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
Second. Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye. Indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? None heard. The meeting minutes are approved. Just want to say a few words before we get started today. We have a very full agenda. This is my second meeting as board chair, and it's a very, I think, exciting agenda today. The board will be asked to consider the first three projects for approval under the residential component of the Aspire program. And just to remind everyone, Aspire was created under the Economic Recovery Act of 2020, signed by Governor Murphy in January 2021, to bridge financing gaps for real estate developers. The three Aspire applications we'll discuss today represent nearly $338 million in investments in underserved areas of Morristown, Newark, and Camden. Combined, they totaled 728 housing units, of which 200 will be new construction and 528 will be completely rehabilitated. 80%, or 588 of these units, are affordable. These amenity-rich projects, which will offer safe, modern, and affordable housing stock, and thousands of feet in mixed-use office and mixed-use space, are just the beginning of a series of planned projects in the pipeline to be considered for Aspire tax credits. The pipeline of Aspire applications currently under staff review to ensure eligibility represent a total of more than 3,500 housing units, of which over 32% are considered affordable. It also includes tens of thousands of square feet of mixed-use space in areas of the state where there is a dire need for investment. We look forward to this board's consideration of these projects in the coming months. We're excited to see the Aspire program gaining momentum as it begins to advance Governor Murphy's vision for thriving communities with equity and inclusion in mind when it comes to creating a sustainable, high quality of life for all New Jerseyans. Today, the board will also be asked to approve the selection of managers for venture funds designed to drive investment into targeted areas. These three funds combined will represent $95 million in capital from the federal State Small Business Credit Initiative. The Blended Capital Fund, the Life Science Healthcare Fund, and Socially and Economically Disadvantaged Individuals, or SEDI, seed fund, will use federal State Small Business Credit Initiative funding that continues to encourage and leverage innovation throughout the state. Additionally, the board will be asked to approve the selection of three firms to manage the $20 million Black and Latino Seed Fund, the only investment fund across the country aimed to increase capital access for early-stage innovative companies founded by diverse entrepreneurs throughout the state. The capital for the Black and Latino Seed Fund was appropriated through the 2021 and 2022 state budget bills that Governor Murphy signed into law, demonstrating the administration's commitment and prioritization of this important initiative. So we have a very full agenda today. Before I turn it back to Tim for his remarks, I want to continue to ask your patience as I am still in the early innings of navigating the workings of public service in the EDA. And I'd really like to express my appreciation for the continued support of my fellow board members, Tim and the EDA staff, as we continue to learn about all the impactful initiatives underway here at the New Jersey EDA. Tim, over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for those kind words. We have a ton to get through. As the Chairman mentioned, we've had longer agendas before, but we were saying upstairs when we were prepping for this, each of these items is probably pound for pound some of the densest, one of the densest agendas we've seen in a good long while. And that's a good thing, because we're doing a lot of really good, exciting things a lot in the CEO report, which I'll just run through briefly, April, May, June, peak busy season around here, around state government, around
Trenton. It's something Chris said a while ago.
Excuse me, folks who are on the line, if you can go ahead and go on mute.
We need an appointment to talk specifically.
All right. May is a small business month. Last week was Small Business Week. I'm not sure why there's a Small Business Week and month at the same time, but okay. We announced last week that we've, under the Main Street program, provided more than $85 million of support for that, over 2,300 small businesses, which is just a landmark milestone achievement. And recall, prior to COVID, prior to Governor Murphy making three consecutive, Treasurer making three consecutive recommendations for $50 million of annual support for our Main Street programs, we hadn't gotten a penny of direct appropriation small business support in a long time. And so that's an historic uptick in our impact on small business and Main Streets all throughout the state that we're really, really proud of. I did a great small business walk in the Ironbound on Friday of last week with Congressman Menendez and Majority Leader Weed and the Budget Chair and Assemblywoman Spike and a number of other folks, really highlighting the impact. We visited one of the establishments that participated in one of the Main Street programs as well as Sustain and Serve. And those have been incredibly impactful, door-to-door, year-to-year impactful programs on the lives of small businesses all throughout the state that we're very, very proud of. We also in April launched the joint ventures program, the cannabis program. It's got lots of great applications. We'll look forward to making approvals on that in the coming months. Joint ventures is tied and is currently one of the two finalists for the best named program around here with the Fridge program, which also launched. So joint ventures versus Fridge, sort of the gold medal game for what has the best name of the programs. We have some real dogs with names too, so it's good to have some really great names. Disrespectful to dogs, I love dogs. We also launched the NJ Zip program, the next round, most recent round of the NJ Zip, small and mid-sized business, medium and heavy-duty truck incentive program, a really important part of the clean energy agenda around here. We got 300 applications in a blink, which is a ton, which is really great. We're also continuing to make approval to Tara. We'll talk about this in a few minutes around the and Alice will talk about this around the child care program, the manufacturing voucher program. We're making approvals under more than $10 million has actually got out the door. That's an update from just last week when we were at 8.5 or so, because those are continuing. If we get an update after the meeting, it might be even more. We're continuing to push forward hard on wind. Jen and Kathy and others will talk about some wind initiatives today. We were together in Atlantic City last week, 2 weeks ago, to kick off a really important training program with Mayor Small and Rowan College of South Jersey and Atlantic Cape Community College to really get folks, particularly in Atlantic City, but all throughout the state, ready for careers in offshore wind, which is just an incredibly important opportunity for economic growth and economic diversification, one of many. So we have a ton going on. We've got a ton to do today, so I'll zip it up. But I want to just express my appreciation for the board and their continued support for everything we're doing, particularly you, Mr. Chairman, and our staff, which works tirelessly around the clock, around the calendar, to advance so well on all these various programs. That, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim.
Back to you.
We'll dive into it. So I'm going to first give the policy committee report as the chair of the policy committee. We did have a very extensive meeting on May 1st and reviewed 10 memos, which are on today's board agenda. I want to highlight a few, which will be discussed and presented in greater detail momentarily. One will be a request for additional funds for the Child Care Facilities Improvement Program Phase 1. We will, as I mentioned briefly, also discuss the New Jersey Black and Latino Seed Fund manager approvals. We will seek approval of three SSBCI initiatives, number one in life sciences and healthcare, number two in socially and economically disadvantaged individuals, for those individuals, and number three, blended capital fund manager approval. And then finally, we will discuss and hopefully seek approval of the inaugural cohort of the qualified venture firms under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program. So with that, we're going to dive right in, and I'm going to ask Michelle Bowden, our Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer, to give us what we're going to try and do today is give a little bit of framing before we dive into the specific approval. So Michelle, over to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I am so very pleased, actually, and elated this morning to provide you with just a bit of context and framing as it relates to what my colleague, Mr. Asache, will soon detail in the following recommendation to seek approval for the Black and Latino Seed Fund managers. Developing the most diverse and inclusive innovation economy in the nation has been a major priority for the administration. We are keenly aware that within the world of venture capital, Black and Latino founders have historically faced inequities, especially as it relates to early stage funding. National data shows that while Latino-founded businesses have made up nearly 50% of net new small business growth from 2007 to 2017, from 2018 to 2021, angel seed and early stage investments for Latino founders remain stalled, with an overall increase of just $20 million over 3 years. Black-founded startups have struggled with investment funding as well. Investment in Black founders has accounted for only 1% of the venture capital market for the last several years, a disproportionate underrepresentation of the roughly 15% Black and African American population across the country. As a first step towards creating an impactful and sustainable solution, the NJEDA undertook a disparity study to review our equity investments. No surprise, the disparity was identified from minority-owned businesses, and the results of that report recommend a comprehensive approach to addressing this disparity, including the use of both race-neutral and race-conscious measures. The EDA team is currently finalizing this analysis of the report to provide the authority with a comprehensive understanding of the amount of investment necessary to not only correct the disparity identified in our historic investment portfolio, but also how to ensure we maintain our advances in equity for minority-owned businesses across the state. The administration's commitment to ensuring that our Black and Latino founders are intentionally included in the state's growing innovation economy and has been evidenced by what our chairman pointed out earlier, by the appropriation of $10 million for a Black and Latino seed fund in the governor's 2021 budget, and further reinforced by the appropriation of an additional $10 million the following fiscal year. As a result, we are proud to bring forward the Black and Latino Seed Fund, a first-in-the-nation type of fund, to the board members today. To give more insight and detail into this groundbreaking fund, I now turn it over to my esteemed colleague, Emmanuel Asachai, diversity entrepreneur and finance officer, to present.
Good morning, Chairman, CEO Tim, and board members and rest staff. It's a pleasure to be here. This month, staff is recommending allocations from the state's Black and Latino Seed Fund to three fund managers for an available allocation up to $20 million. $10 million each of the fiscal years 2021 and 2022 provided for in the New Jersey state budgets as signed into law by Governor Murphy. The authority's adoption and execution of the Black and Latino Seed Fund as acknowledged by our esteemed Chief Diversity Officer's remark, it's part of a broader strategy base of action staff anticipates reduce disparity in venture capital funding to diverse founders identified by the authority's Equity Investment Disparity Study. The selected managers were respondents to the authority's Notice of Investment Opportunity issued on February 9th of this year, 2023, to gather submissions from venture capital managers that have demonstrated competency, capacity, and skill in managing early-stage investment strategies into startups and early-stage companies. The authority received a total of 9 responses and were reviewed by cross-functional teams of EDA staff in 2 rounds and scored according to rubric that is ascribed in Appendix A of the memo. Recommendations are to commit up to $7.5 million to fund manager Conscious Venture Partners, up to $5 million to fund manager Red Bike Capital, and up to $7.5 million to accelerator manager Tail Venture Partners. The managers will make investments into early-stage Black and Latino-owned businesses in New Jersey. The authority's allocation to California-based Tail Venture Partners will catalyze its HQ relocation to Camden, New Jersey. That's something we're really proud of. Similarly, allocations to Red Bank Capital and Conscious Venture Partners will also see firms, the respective firms, open offices in Jersey City and Trenton, New Jersey. Approval today will provide delegated authority to the CEO and staff to execute documents toward closing in the form of a fund or separate account commitment that aligns with the terms of the firm's main fund. We appreciate your consideration and welcome any questions, and thank you for your attention, and I'll take any questions at this moment.
I think I told the board a little capper of that. One, this is a huge deal. It took a long time to get done. The disparity study, Chris Baker deserves a medal or whatever commendations are available for getting that over the goal line. Obviously, starting with the governor and the legislature to provide this funding and to make the commitment both sort of intellectually and as a policy matter to this really important ambition. And then the outcome, I think, surpassed even our biggest expectations here. Just to emphasize, 3 funds, 2 of which are out-of-state funds that are going to open offices in New Jersey, one of which is going to move its headquarters to Camden. There will be venture capital activity in a much bigger way in Trenton and Camden compared to where there is this morning. No one's declaring mission accomplished. No one's declaring that, you know, we've got it all sorted out and now the world's a better place. But this is a big step in the right direction. And Michelle, Emmanuel, lots of other folks deserve a huge amount of credit and deep appreciation. Hopefully you'll say yes, because I've never been a very challenging reader to try and say no on this one. But it's a watershed moment for equity in venture capital here in New Jersey.
Any questions from the board?
Motion to approve, Angela.
Do I hear a second?
Sorry, good morning. Aisha Glover. More just a comment. Do we want to commend EDA both on the disparity study within, you know, our own efforts and then, you know, taking significant steps to establish the fund. This is not a trick question by any stretch of the imagination, but of course this amount is just a start. So wondering, you know, what is there a longer term play here or goal or something that came out in the disparity study that would give us as a board some insight into what the amount would need to be in order to kind of rectify some of the past limitations.
Yes, good morning, Aisha. Thanks for the question, Tim. A couple of things. The venture capital, the disparity study, importantly, unlocks our ability to do a bunch of stuff around the entire venture portfolio. So we will have, you know, further conversations about what this means for Evergreen, what this means for our LP strategy, and what this means for Project Innovation Fellows as well, memory serves. And so we do think this unlocks or opens up the opportunity to be much more intentional in those programs. As it relates to further funding, part one, we're going to see how this goes before I think we can ask the legislature for more money and ask the governor for more money. But I think success breeds success, so hopefully we will have some wins here pretty quickly. I think today is a win, but more importantly, when we start funding companies and they start hiring a bunch of people and raising capital and creating wealth, and they're chipping away at the wealth disparity. Not going to solve it with this fund, but chipping away at it. Hopefully we'll have a track record we can point to and say, hey, we've got a proof of concept here, and also hopefully more private capital flows, right? Ideally, this is going to be a proof of concept that shows the marketplace, hey, if you invest in Black and Latino founders, you'll do well. Keep investing.
Right. Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? We have a motion. We need a second. So you're a second?
Second. I'll second it. Thank you.
All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yeah, learn to wait. Any opposed? Any refusals or abstentions? None being heard, the motion passes. Thank you, guys. Congratulations. Kathleen Coviello is now going to, again, give us some framing context on the next three items that we're going to discuss.
Good morning. Good to see everyone. I think this is maybe my third time at this podium talking about the State Small Business Credit Initiative, but just wanted to lay out, as the chairman noted, a little bit of context before the next three votes. So folks might recall the State Small Business Credit Initiative is a federal funding program. New Jersey's allocation was formulaic, and we were awarded $255 million directly to New Jersey Treasury, who then in turn contracted with the EDA to deploy the capital. The board might recall that this funding comes in three tranches. The first is for $79.3 million. Those funds are in the bank account of the EDA today. And we have to deploy 80% of that capital before we can draw down the second tranche and so on for the third tranche. This is part of the American Rescue Plan, and as I noted, comes with federal compliance requirements. The board has already approved three programs under this allocation. The first was the Angel Matching Program for $20 million. That program application is open, running, and accepting applications. We hope to be back to this board in very short order with our first approval. The second is the Recovery Loan Loss Reserve. That application is opening later this month. And the third is our Clean Energy Loan Program for $80 million. And again, that application is open and already accepting applicants. So those three programs are up and running. What you'll hear today, the request is around the venture capital investment program. We went out to market, as Emmanuel said, back in February with notice of investments for the Black and Latino Seed Fund. At the same time, we went out for the Life Science Fund, the Blended Capital Fund, and the STEADY Fund, the Socially Economically Disadvantaged Individual Fund. The SSBCI program has several requirements that informed how we structured these different funding initiatives, one of which is a requirement of a one-to-one private match on everything we do. So the fund managers will have to provide capital that matches the federal funding. It cannot be state matching funds. So you'll notice that in the context of those approvals. The other important requirement around this allocation is the overall portfolio has to meet a 10-to-1 leverage. In this case, leverage is public funds to private funds. So in the scenario where we're looking at venture capital and angel investing, we anticipate those companies will secure follow-on funding that will bring us up to that 10-to-1 ratio. That was part of our application and approval to the federal government. So hopefully that's a good segue for my colleague Lexi Demarelli, who will present the first approval under the Life Science Fund. The SETI Fund will also be next in the agenda, and finally the Blended Capital Investment Fund. Those three are our SSBCI-funded programs for your consideration today. Lexi Demarelli, over to you. Lexi is a venture officer in covering angel and life science investing in our venture team.
Thank you, Kathleen. Hi, my name is Lexi Demarelli, in case you've been here three times prior.
So I am in charge of leading the SSDCI outreach and due diligence for life science and healthcare companies in New Jersey. We have recommended approval of three life science funds for a total of $25 million for the first round of SSDCI life science program. Staff seeks to select additional managers within the first 3 years. I'm really having trouble reading this. Of the first 3 years to deploy the balance of $60 million for approved as the first part of SSBCI application. Following notice of investment opportunities that were issued February 9th, staff identified the following three recommendations for venture fund managers in the life science and healthcare process. The first one is Signet Healthcare Management, LLC, and it is recommended for amount up to $12.5 million. Established in 1998, Signet is raising their fifth fund. Based in New York, they have a meaningful track record of investing in New Jersey companies, and this SSBCI investment will cause them to open up an office in New Jersey. Second is Tech Council Ventures, LLC. It is recommended for an amount of $7.5 million. Tech Council is established in 2000 and is a venture firm operating and active in the state of New Jersey and the innovative ecosystem. The commitment here will establish a vehicle to invest in New Jersey life science companies in parallel with their main fund. And the third fund is Cyberdex Bio, LLC, and we are recommending a $5 million investment. Cyberdex Bio is a newly formed firm, and it is operating in Princeton. The firm will invest in therapies that treat diseases disproportionately affecting economically disadvantaged or underserved communities. They have an office. They will have office hours in Camden, New Brunswick, and Jersey City. The results of the scoring process are presented in your memorandum, and it outlines the key strengths of each firm and their unique strategies. In the fund managers, we seek to deploy capital in New Jersey life science or healthcare businesses, which is one of the innovative sectors of our state, aligning with Governor Murphy's strategic economic development plan. As a reminder, each fund will be required to secure at least $1 of private capital for each dollar of SSBCI funding provided for New Jersey-based companies. Approval today will delegate authority to NJEDA CEO and the staff to execute documents to close commitments that aligns with the terms of the venture fund's main fund. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Any questions from the board? Anyone on the phone?
Chair, I have a question. I may have missed it, but so we have three, we're going to allocate funds to three different fund managers, right? They're different amounts. How are those amounts determined? Was that part of the scoring criteria
Yes. That
they fit into?
Yes. So the Cyberdex Bio LLC is a new fund, so they don't have fund experience, but yet they're targeting disproportionately diseases that affect disproportionately economically disadvantaged communities. So we wanted to support that. We wanted to put in $5 million. And we also wanted to target the first round of $25 million. After we get 80% of those invested, we will look to expand other life science funds as well.
Thank
you. Of course.
Charles, if I could add, there's also a caveat that they have to invest in New Jersey businesses. So each applicant requested a dollar amount that they felt comfortable they could deploy in New Jersey and match with private capital out of their main fund. So that was also a contributing factor to the ultimate decision.
That makes sense. Makes sense.
Any other questions?
Did I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Shimko.
Robert?
I'll second. I'm sorry. Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion among the board? All right. I'd like to proceed with a vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or any recusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. The next presentation is Emmanuel again on the State Small Business Credit Initiative for socially and economically disadvantaged individuals.
Double acronym, SSBCI.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you again, board members and staff. This month, staff is recommending three additional allocations of up to $20 million in aggregate from the state's Small Business Credit Initiative, Socially Economically Disadvantaged Individuals, SETI, seed fund. The authority received seven unique responses to the authority's notice of investment opportunity on February 9th, as we've mentioned before. Top respondents were certain to ensure that the SSBCI investment is catalytic to private financing based on the fund's age, size, and experience. Staff recommends aggregate allocation of up to $20 million to be matched by private capital on a one-to-one basis by the successful managers. And as such, recommendations are to commit up to $5 million to accelerator and fund manager, Generator Management LLC, and fund manager include Venture Partners LLC for an amount up to $15 million to make investments into portfolio of businesses led by socially and economically disadvantaged individuals in New Jersey. Generator proposes a total of $10 million of greater New Jersey-based and New Jersey company-exclusive seed venture capital fund. Consistent with Generator's past successes, this fund will be industry-agnostic, sector-agnostic, and invested in pre-seed and seed rounds of New Jersey businesses. Include Venture Partners manages a direct investment vehicle focused on investing in diverse-led, undervalued, outperforming founders with a focus on ESG and sustainability. And staff proposes a $15 million investment on the basis that include currently demonstrate the ability to develop and deploy matching funds at the fund level on a one-to-one basis and will continue to raise towards a $100 million fund target. Staff reiterates the request to the board for the allocation from the state study seed fund to fund the manager generator of an amount up to $7.5 million and to fund manager include Venture Partners for an amount up to $15 million. Both will make an investment into a portfolio of businesses led by steady entrepreneurs in New Jersey. Thank you for your attention, and any more questions?
One clarification on the numbers. Both supply of the memo say 5 and 15, not 7 and 15. 5 and 15?
It is 5 and 15, yes. Sorry.
Question.
Yes.
I'm assuming that what Kathleen spoke about on the earlier tranche, that the amounts were based on what the company felt they could invest.
Yes, absolutely. So Generator, for example, is a national platform, similar to like the Techstars and such. So they've had great expertise in raising state or city-specific funds, typically in an accelerator model, and they'll be doing so here. And typically, their base of LPs come from successful portfolio companies they've invested into the past. So they have a lot of ultra-high net worth individuals that have succeeded in the accelerator program that they tap into as LPs into their current funds. They indicated to us, we had multiple calls with them, they indicated to us that base exists there for an interest in private capital to match whatever allocation we gave to them for a New Jersey-specific fund, and they'll be doing that. Include Ventures already has about $19 million raised towards the $100 million target fund, and they will be, they can match that to New Jersey companies.
Other questions? Anyone on the phone? Okay, can I hear a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you. And Jenny, you'll second. Thank you. Any further discussion before a vote? All right. All those in favor, please indicate so by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Antoine Johnson, recuse myself for prevent virtue.
contract.
Got it?
Yeah.
You got that?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Antoine. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next presentation is by Christina Fuentes.
Okay. All right. So I'm coming on the tail end for the last product for SSBCI. So this action item is seeking board approval to commit $50 million out of New Jersey's $255 million allocation from U.S. Treasury to a blended capital fund. This investment is subject to agreements conforming to the terms specified in the term sheet attached to your memo as Appendix B, with final terms approved by our CEO. Staff has selected Calvert Impact or its affiliates as the approved fund manager of the blended capital fund. Calvert Impact will leverage and utilize the investment by NJEDA in the blended capital fund to create and administer a New Jersey loan participation program to support New Jersey-based businesses with working capital loans. The funds will operate consistent with SSBCI and NJEDA requirements. Finally, staff is seeking approval to spend up to $850,000 for upfront expenses from the New Jersey NJEDA SSBCI Administrative Fund. On February 9th, 2023, staff posted a notice of investment opportunity to select a fund manager for this fund or special purpose vehicle. Based upon responses and scoring, Calvert Impact was selected as the fund manager. The scoring rubric is also Appendix A, and a full in-depth description of Calvert's overall experience and experience in administering similar funds for other states is Appendix C in your memo as well. The main role of the fund manager is to oversee the purchasing of eligible working capital loans originating by participating community development financial institutions and minority depository institutions. The fund manager will use SSBCI funds and must leverage EDA's investment with private capital to purchase up to 80% of eligible loans with a cap of $250,000 from the participating lenders and opt in and train these funds, train the CDFIs as well too. After purchasing loan participations, the fund manager will securitize notes backed by the loan participations, allowing for the replenishment of the fund's capital and the ability to purchase additional eligible loan participations. Calvert will brand and market this program statewide to help generate interest and streamline leads to participating lenders. They will also recruit and train CDFIs and NDIs that will opt into offering the working capital loan product that NJEDA has initially framed out. The loan will be offered to businesses that have been operating for at least 12 months prior to application, have 50 or less full-time employees, making less than $10 million in revenue. NJEDA staff will work with the fund manager to oversee lenders that opt in and review batches of loans prior to purchases. The fund manager will also be responsible for SSBCI compliance and reporting as necessary. Happy to take any questions.
Questions?
Anyone on the phone?
Okay, hearing no questions, we should move to approve. If I can hear a motion to approve.
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Angela.
Thank you. Any further discussion before proceeding to a vote? Although, hearing none, all in favor, please indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Antoine Johnson, recusal.
Noted?
For the same reason.
For the same reason.
All right, thank you. The motion passes.
I could just, before we move on from SSBCI, I'll be real brief, but we got great news about 2 years ago that there was going to be a huge amount of money coming from the federal government to support the SSBCI initiative. With that great news came two other pieces of news. One, a telephone book worth of rules and regulations need to be complied with, and no time to do it, and an incredibly short fuse. So starting with the treasurer and her team have been great partners. Kathleen, Christina, Riley Edwards, who I hope is listening in a prior role, shepherded through the morass of federal rules and federal restrictions to come with this wonderful gift of money, and got it done. And now we are 6 for 6 on having all of our initiatives approved, launched, blessed, whatever the right words are, and that's a huge accomplishment. Unsexy, but important to hit all the federal compliance rules so we don't lose this money. So deep appreciation to the folks I mentioned. I'm sure I left out some folks that I should have, but should have mentioned, but a huge, huge, huge amount of work went to getting to those three approvals and the three prior ones as well on SSBCI. And if we get it right, we get to keep this money as a state. The chairman has noted rightfully several times, if we get the 10 years from now, we get this money back, we get to keep it.
So, well, hopefully multiples of this money.
That's the idea.
Yes. And I do, I think this is, I mean, this should have enormous impact if we can deploy it successfully. So it's pretty staggering. All right, we're going to move on, continuing our full agenda to community development, and Kara Colton, Executive Vice President for Economic Security, is going to give us a framing context here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. I'm really thrilled to be coming back to the board today to request additional funding to support the overwhelming demand that we've experienced for our Child Care Facilities Improvement Grant Program. My extraordinary colleague, Alex Himmel, is going to be presenting the details, but just as context, wanted to briefly cover the funding that we have been equipped with to provide grants and other supports to child care providers throughout New Jersey. The far left of this slide shows what we already have been approved to distribute to the board, which is about $24.5 million in a combination of federal and state funding. As you'll hear from Alex in a moment, we have been, in a positive way, deluged with applications from child care centers, in large part because the kind of funding that we're making available, we're providing grants to child care centers to make facility improvements, this money just doesn't generally exist, and it's not something that is readily available. So Alex will be explaining the additional funding that we're seeking, and we are also preserving a portion of funding that we have to do subsequent program phases, including support for family child care homes, home-based providers, as well as to sort of continue the evolution of the program that we have. I just wanted to say, kind of in closing, Tim always talks about child care as economic infrastructure. When we conceptualized this program and brought it to you for approval about a year ago, we had a lot of hypotheses about why this was important, why this was economic development, and they've really been affirmed. We believed that this was something that was certainly by improving child care facilities would equip more people, more women. I know something the Treasurer has really championed to stay in the workforce or to enter the workforce or enter training, and we've been hearing that from the centers, but we've also been hearing from them about the ability to expand their capacity. We think that this funding will fairly significantly increase the number of spaces available in our child care system, but also to raise the bar of the quality that New Jersey's youngest learners are exposed to. And that's something that we take very seriously and something that we've seen time and time again in the applications that are coming through. So really proud to be proven right, frankly, and to come to you with a good problem, which is being very significantly oversubscribed and thankfully having some additional funds in reserve to deploy. So I'll turn it over to Alex.
Good morning, everyone. As part of Governor Murphy's comprehensive strategy to support and strengthen the state's vital child care sector and its role in the state's long-term economic recovery, in May of 2022, this board approved the use of up to $20 million of the $54.5 million in federal rescue plan funds, as well as an additional $4.45 million in state funds to establish the New Jersey Child Care Facilities Improvement Program. As a reminder, the program provides grants for total project costs between $50,000 and $200,000 to licensed child care centers to make improvements to their facilities, in addition to allowing for cost overruns of up to 15% of total project costs. Improvements will contribute to creating high-quality early childhood learning environments. Child care centers must enroll or have enrolled in the last 12 months in the Child Care Assistance Subsidy Program and commit to New Jersey's Quality Rating and Improvement System, Grow NJ Kids. 40% of the funding is set aside for providers in Opportunity Zone eligible census tracts. As Tara said, the demand has been enormous and has far exceeded our expectations. As of May 9th, There are approximately 1,300 eligible licensed centers in the state, and to date, we have 951 applications in our system, with 451 that have been fully submitted. Of those 451 applications, they're requesting over $78 million in requested funding, and with that cost overrun, that number goes up to $89 million. The average request for these improvements are $173,000, and of those requests, 30% are in those eligible opportunity zone census tracts. Those applications are also potentially impacting 9,200 members of the early childhood workforce and 37,000 children across New Jersey represented in 20 counties in the state. We're also thrilled to report that we've approved 31 applications so far in a requested funding amount of $5.7 million. And $6.5 million when you factor in those cost overruns. Those average project costs are $186,000 and represent 24% in opportunity eligible census tracts. To meet the overwhelming demand for this program, we're requesting the approval for the following items: to amend the existing MOU with the New Jersey Department of Community Affairs to accept an additional $20 million in American Rescue Plan funds, to enter into a new memorandum of understanding with the Department of Community Affairs to accept up to $30 million of ARP funds that are appropriated through the fiscal year 23 appropriations, and then to use a portion of the administrative costs allocated to the program to issue a purchase order for temporary employment services to help process that overwhelming number of applications and ensure grant agreements are issued to all the very excited and willing participants from the child care community. So thank you so much, and happy to answer any questions.
Just real quickly, if I may, I promise I'll stop interrupting. But one, thank you, Alex and Tara. Two, childcare is economic infrastructure. Good luck running your economy if the childcare system turns off, just like if the water doesn't run or the electricity doesn't come out of the walls. People don't show up to work if there's no childcare. Three, this is personal for lots of us who have kids in the childcare system and are in the lives of little kids. What we do for them is everything. Four, these projects all pay prevailing wage and are required to. And we've had a great partner in Rob Sarangelo and his colleagues in making sure that we works with the registered contract list, which is many thousands of folks who we reached out to and did great collaboration with Rob and his team to make sure that not only are we supporting kids and supporting the people who work in childcare centers, but we're supporting family-sustaining jobs for the folks doing the work to support those kids and those centers.
I was just going to say, this is just another great example of how we work together across agencies, what great things can happen. And for some folks out there who are upset that we don't have every dollar spent yet from our federal funds, it takes time to put these kind of programs together that are going to be impactful. And this is just a great example of that. And I love using our registered contractor list to help find contractors to set up with these child care facilities who probably have never done any kind of construction project in their entire life. And so it's just a great all-around partnership. Just curious if there's what has been the biggest pain point for some of the applicants in this process, other than funding, obviously.
Yeah. I think finding a good fit in terms of their contractor, someone who understands the nature of the sector and the limitations that there are around doing capital improvements, certain things you can't do when children are around, and being really flexible. So I think that's probably the one that we hear the most about. But obviously 400 plus applicants have been able to manage their way through that.
With the initial application, was there a application closed period, or is the application period still open?
The application is still open.
So when the public, presumably this board will vote in favor, and when the public hears another tranche of money, we could expect another wave potentially of applications?
Potentially. We have a good amount that are in progress that haven't been fully submitted, so perhaps a lot of those will turn over into fully submitted applications.
I think either Alex or Tara mentioned, there's a finite universe of eligible applicants here, which we think is about 1,300. We've touched where we have active 950 or so, so there's only a little delta left out there of folks who have chosen not to participate so far.
Right.
They could certainly wake up, you know, this afternoon when we announce that we'll be supporting this initiative. That's a high-class problem. I'm sure we'll figure out how to solve it.
I think when we also discussed this at committee, we calculated that if everybody who was in the queue applied, we would have exhausted the funds.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean, we're already kind of facing that.
Right.
I would also observe in the governor's budget and brief documents more about than I do. There is a placeholder that says federal funds to be determined for additional support for childcare facilities.
Still have, roughly $1.1 billion.
What that number is, not my decision, above my pay grade, but.
Just a follow-up question. I mean, obviously, it's a great program and overwhelming response. We've approved 19. Do we have the capacity here to process these applications? And is this on the outreach resource?
Oh, it's asking my question. Tara gets a brand every time I call it up and say, how are we doing?
I think the short answer is yes, because we're doing it in a staggered fashion, and it has been, looking around the room, like there's probably 25 people in this room on the EDA team who are part of it. And so because it has to go through all these toll booths before it gets to being closed, we've been able to manage it and do it. Everyone isn't all in the same stage at once.
Okay.
So because we're staggering them and kind of moving them along the path, it's been manageable. We are working, and that's part of what's in the request, to be able to bring on some more tech staff to just keep the machine moving. But we also take, to Commissioner's point, we take our responsibilities very seriously as stewards of federal money, public money, and so the level of review that's required takes longer.
Sure.
We're reviewing the applicant, we're reviewing the contractors, we're reviewing the eligibility of the project, we're reviewing the cost reasonableness of the project. So there are some stops and starts along the way.
Yeah, the other thing I'd comment on, I think in this program and a lot of Christina's programs, we have high volume applications. Doing the customer service work of just checking in with folks every now and again solves a lot of the odds that can exist of, people just yelling up on them and have gone away for a few months. We're here, we're answering your questions, we're working on just, a very soft, light touch usually keeps people from freaking out. Not 100% of the time.
Of the 40% goal to reach the opportunity zone component, how much of the spend so far has met that goal?
24. Yeah.
Just to confirm, this is, not that I should maybe care about this, but this is all federal funds we're allocating here.
Today.
A bit of state money from the prior round. In theory, we've already spent state money.
Motion to approve.
Any other questions, discussion?
I do have a question about the temporary employment services. Have we looked internally about hiring full-time people here if we're having so many applications across all the programs that we have? I mean, we are supposed to create full-time jobs, not
and we? I think we've done a pretty good job of that. One of the things, great question, we've continued to grow the staff. The budget that you all approved in December, whatever, gave us some additional headcount authorization, which we will actually bump it up again a little earlier than planned, so we're being thoughtful on how we think about that. We have had a really good success in using the temp to perm route of, I don't know, making up numbers, Chris, 40 or 50 folks that have probably started as temps and joined as permanent folks, either replacing folks who retired or found another job or as we've added staff. So the temp pipeline has yielded some entry-level folks, mid- and senior-level folks who, it's kind of a mutual tryout for a couple months and see if everybody likes everybody, and then we've made a lot of them. I'm guessing 40, 50, I can get you real numbers, but it's a sizable number of conversions into permanent jobs.
All right.
Thank you. Okay, I think we have a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Did you get that? The second?
Yes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? All right, the motion is approved. Congratulations. We're next going to move to incentives, and Ginny, I think you're going to give the incentives committee report briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On May 1st, the incentive committee met, and as you mentioned in your comments, we have three hugely economically impactful projects before us under the Aspire program, as well as a number of firms under the Evergreen Innovation Fund, as well as a digital media tax credit and a film tax credit. So with that, I look forward to hopefully getting them approved, and thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Jenny, we're going to move on to the Aspire program approvals first. Dan Jennings, I think, is going to give us an overview, the framing context, before we go to specifics. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, members of the board. So as the chairman noted earlier, the purpose of the program is to fill financing gaps of residential projects that support Governor Murphy's goals around smart growth and equitable investments in art in the state's downtowns, urban municipalities, and underserved neighborhoods. Residential projects can be mixed income, mixed use, transit-oriented, all affordable, or a combination thereof. All residential projects must reserve at least 20% of their units as affordable. As Chairman, you pointed out earlier, the good news is for the three projects you'll hear today, they will reserve 80% of their units as affordable. Eligible projects can receive up to 45%, and so other cases, 50% or 60% of eligible cost. The maximum award ranges from 42 to 60 million. There is a separate transformative project budget where very large projects can receive up to $350 million apiece. None of the projects we're presenting today belong in that bucket. We currently have 17 residential applications for this program, and we're expecting more in the coming months. We hope to bring most of those applications, the existing applications, to the board before the end of the year, starting with the three that my colleague Kevin DeSchmidt will now present.
So thanks, Dan. Good morning, board. So the first application is for OAHS, Manahan Village LLC, as the applicant, and Moorsum Family Aspire LLC as the co-applicant. So this is obviously for a residential project located in Moorestown, New Jersey, for the issuance of tax credits to the Aspire program for up to 35.21% of total project costs, not to exceed $24,673,846. So this project involved the substantial rehabilitation and long-term preservation of 200 existing units of affordable housing in Morrison. It is currently 100% occupied. Known as Manahan Village, this complex consists of 26 low-rise garden-style apartment buildings consisting of 27 one-bedroom units, 75 two-bedroom units, 74 three-bedroom units, 19 four-bedroom units, and 5 five-bedroom units. The Housing Authority of the Township of Morristown, or HAM, currently owns the site, and on December 14, 2022, they executed a ground lease for land and improvements with OAHS Manahan Village LLC in the amount of $20 million. At the same time, the applicant closed on bond transaction with NJHMFA, as well as an allocation of 4% low-income housing tax credits. At the time of this financial closing, PNC Bank NA joined the partnership as an investor member, assuming a 99.98% ownership of OHS Manahan Village LLC. And a special member, Columbia Housing SLP Corp, joined, assuming a 0.01% ownership. The remaining project ownership represents a joint venture between Orbach Affordable Housing Solutions and HAM by way of various single-purpose entities. So the rules allow for a co-applicant to participate in the financing of the project, and they have to meet various criteria. So I'm going to just outline the co-applicant provision as it relates to this project. So the co-applicant is Moorestown Family Aspire LLC, or MFA. It's an entity wholly owned by the Moorestown Community Development Corporation, MCDC, which is a Title 15A New Jersey nonprofit corporation, an instrumentality of HAM. MCDC has applied to qualify as a nonprofit for taxation purposes under the provisions of Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code and authority staff is in receipt of documentation of this application. MFA is a disregarded entity for tax purposes and thus takes on the characteristics of its parent and therefore would be a non-profit for taxation purposes. HAM is the owner and operator of a community center adjacent to the project and has committed to providing a variety of services by way of MFA at the community center that will directly impact residents of the redevelopment project. The applicant and co-applicant have entered into a participation agreement that specifies the co-applicant's participation in the redevelopment project and evidences a commitment to providing the services previously described. The commitment encompasses the duration of the Aspire eligibility period. Per the rules in the application, the co-applicant has demonstrated the following as well. The co-applicant has provided staff with a valid tax clearance certificate as of this recommendation. The co-applicant's organizational purpose encompasses the proposed participation. The co-applicant has the financial and operational capability to provide the proposed contribution or services. The co-applicant's receipt and sale of tax credits is necessary to finance the redevelopment project. The lead development entity, so effectively the developer as we would refer to them in the general, in the colloquial context, is Orbach Affordable Housing Solutions, LLC, or OAHS. It was established in 2009 and is based in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. It is an organization of experienced real estate professionals that currently operates a portfolio of approximately 4,000 residential multifamily units with plans to add over 1,000 units through upcoming acquisitions. So the applicant proposes uses for the project as it relates to total development costs, which are roughly $86.3 million, and then total eligible project costs is roughly $70 million. By statute, eligible project costs exclude the acquisition of value in land and developer fees. Additionally, various reserves to fund interest and operating expenses during lease-up are excluded by the rules. So basically, the total development cost is all the costs incurred by the developer, and then the total project costs are what we use to size the tax credit. The applicant proposes sources that include a first mortgage, low-income housing tax credit-derived equity, proceeds from the sale of the Aspire tax credits, and a deferred developer fee. The required equity in the project equates to $17,258,301. This equity consists of the LIHTC proceeds of roughly $31 million and deferred developer fee of roughly $4.2 million. Residential projects that are rehabilitations are subject to an Aspire tax credit cap of 45% of project costs, not to exceed $60 million for projects located in a qualified incentive zone. As such, the project is eligible for an Aspire tax credit not to exceed $31.5 million roughly, which is lesser of $60 million and 45% of the project cost. However, additionally, the Aspire award is also capped by the Aspire rule dictating that the sum of the Aspire tax credit and the low-income housing tax credit utilized by the project cannot exceed 90% of project costs, which in this case is roughly $63 million. As such, with a LIHTC allocation of roughly $36.6 million, the project would only be eligible for an Aspire award of $26,388,966. The applicant has requested an award of $24,673,846, which is 35.21% of project costs, and this is the maximum potential award. Because this project is receiving low-income housing tax credits from NJHMFA, and there is no HMFA's deferred developer fee model was used to measure the appropriate and reasonable rate of return. The total developer fee is $8,908,000, with roughly $4.2 million of this deferred and not fully realized until the 10th year of operations, which conforms with the HMFA policy, or rule, excuse me. In December of 2022, due to delay in the authority recommending projects for board approval resulting from uncertainty in proposed rule amendments to the program, the project closed an HMFA financing structure that did not include any Aspire tax credit award. The project concluded a seller's note provided by HAM, which was intended to ultimately be supplanted by the Aspire tax credits when applicable. HAM has represented to the authority in a formal letter that the seller's note was a stopgap measure entered into to meet a deadline imposed by the Rental Assistance Demonstration Program, or RAD, made available by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD.
This program is designed to address public housing authorities' needs and goals. The RAD program is an extraordinarily high demand by public housing authorities nationally. The RAD conversion commitment issued by HUD for Manhattan Village required closing by January 22nd of 2023, and a failure to meet this deadline would have resulted in the loss of more than $2.5 million in annual rental assistance to HAM. Presently, the partnership between Orbeck and HAM is incurring $54,000 a month in interest expenses with the seller's note in place of the aspired tax credit proceeds. As such, the starting staff has determined that a financing gap exists, although the permanent sources currently being in place appear to be sufficient. The current financing structure is the result of a local governmental instrumentality providing an unanticipated financial commitment to preserve financial resources that outside of their control would have no longer been available while the Aspire application was pending. That is only after having applied for the Aspire tax credit. At the time of this recommendation, there are $2,022,183,425 in unallocated tax credit resources available. Available to Aspire projects located in the northernmost counties in the state for the fiscal year. The recommended approval is an award up to 35.21% of total project costs, not to exceed $24,673,846 in Aspire tax credits based upon the applicant's request. In addition to the standard approval, the standard conditions that come with any Aspire approval, this approval is also conditioned upon the applicant providing the authority within 6 months after approval satisfactory evidence that the co-applicant has received the necessary 501c3 determination from the Internal Revenue Service as previously detailed in this recommendation. So I'll stop for questions, and I'll also promise the next two are not bad.
Don't worry about that.
Okay, hey, Kevin, just to be clear, so the actual dollar amount of the tax credits for this is?
$24 million. And $24,673,846. So there's various caps that limit the award. This project just has the rare nuance of the applicant requesting an amount less than that cap.
Okay. And PNC lent against, in effect, the Aspire tax credits to be.
So PNC actually purchased an interest in the project, and then those proceeds basically get contributed to the co-applicant, and the co-applicant lends, but in a not in a literal sense, those return those proceeds to the partnership.
Questions?
Chair, I have a question. So, since the Housing Authority currently owns the project, I'm assuming it's already affordable.
Yeah, it's public housing that's being basically converted to private ownership.
Right. So is in this, in summary, we talk about creating minimum 20% affordable housing. Is this summary different than the statute in terms of preservation? Because this is a rehab, so we're not really
creating. It's not creating, it has to reserve, so those may already exist.
Okay.
If it's entirely new, then it would be creating. So it's not that each project has to have a net new affordable housing component.
Okay. And the preservation is for, an additional, 30 years from the date of the funding, or?
It unfortunately, the answer is it depends. The housing affordability control have different lengths, depending on location and other criteria.
Generally, all of these projects having low-income housing tax credits associated would conform to HMFA rules, which are currently 30, but are in the process of potentially being extended to 45 years. But I don't think that's in place today.
Okay. Any other questions? Questions on the phone? Hearing none. Could I hear a motion to approve?
That's a motion to approve.
Thank you. May I hear a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any further discussion on the board?
All in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, motion passes. All right, Kevin, next one. So this is also a request for Inspire approval. The applicant is 260 Washington Street Urban Renewal LLC, and there's no co-op for this project. So it's a residential project located in Newark, New Jersey. For the essence of tax credits to the Inspire program, up to 45% of total project costs, not to exceed $49,836,119. The proposed project, named the Metropolitan, will be a 23-story high-rise, predominantly residential mixed-use building located in the Central Business District of downtown Newark. The project will have a gross building area of just over 230,000 square feet. The building will consist of 207 residential units, 67 of which will be affordable. The affordability level for these units is 50% of area median income. And there will be a ground floor retail component of approximately 4,000 square feet. Ownership of the project consists of a partnership between BN Property LLC with a 75% stake and Shift Catalyst with a 25% stake. The lead development entity is BN Property LLC, which is jointly owned by Tafer Hanini and Samir Hanini and is a direct affiliate of the Hanini Group LLC. The Hanini Group has more than 20 years of experience and has completed more than $700 million of development projects and is a significant player in downtown Newark. So for this project, the total development costs are $124.2 million. Of that, the project costs are $110.7 million. By statute, eligible project costs exclude developer fee and land acquisition. Additionally, various reserves to fund interest and operating expenses during lease-up are excluded by rule. The proposed sources for the project include a first mortgage, a loan secured by the Aspire proceeds, syndicated equity from high net worth investors, LIHTC equity, and then developer contributed equity. The required equity in this project equates to roughly $24.8 million. Equity consists of roughly $5.8 million in cash, $18.8 million in loan amounting tax credits, and a pledged developer fee totaling $1.875 million. Deferred developer. This residential project is financed with a 9% loan amounting tax credit allocation. Thus, it is eligible for an Aspire tax credit of 45% of project costs. And as a result of being located in a qualified incentive tract, the award cannot exceed $60 million. As such, the project is eligible for an Aspire tax credit not to exceed roughly $49.8 million, which is lesser of $60 million and 45%. Because the project is receiving low-income housing tax credits from NJHMFA, HMFA's deferred developer fee rule was used to measure the appropriate and reasonable rate of return. The total developer fee is $3.75 million with $1.875 million deferred and not fully realized until the fifth year of operations, which conforms with the HMFA rules. Additionally, for informational purposes, NJEDA staff analyzed the pro forma and projections and compared the return with and without the Aspire award over 13 years. The applicant will utilize a 36-month time frame to build and stabilize the project. This analysis assumes a 10-year cash flow with an assumed exit through the sale of the project in year 14 for purposes of calculating the project IRR. With the Aspire tax credit, the equity IRR is 6.1%, which is below the hurdle rate of 16.2% contained in the hurdle rate model provided by EDA's contracted consultant, Jones Lang LaSalle, for comparable multifamily residential developments in Newark. At the time of this recommendation, the available funds are also $2,022,183,000 and change in unallocated tax credit resources available to Aspire projects located in northern counties in the state for this fiscal year. The recommendation is approval of an award of up to 45% of total project costs, not to exceed $49,836,119 in Aspire tax credits based upon the financing gap illustrated by the project's actual capital stack at time of commitment. Thank you, and open it for questions. I just have to, I think I'm going to have to go to the bathroom. We can't stop that. Any questions?
You know what would be helpful for me in the future is if we could see a map or a photo of the parcel. It would be interesting to know where it is and what it looks like. Questions? Anybody on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Dragon.
Thank you. Second? Thank you. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. All right, Kevin, one more. This last request is for Northgate Preservation Urban Renewal LLC as the applicant and Hearthstone HVPG Northgate LLC as the co-op. This is a residential project located in Camden, New Jersey, for the issuance of tax credits to the Aspire program up to 45% of total project cost, not to exceed $46,593,356. The project, known as Northgate One Apartments, is a 21-story high-rise building with 321 units that is currently 100% occupied. The project was built in the 1960s, and there is a significant need for updating and improvements on account of both the building's age and deferred maintenance on account of previous owners. The applicant is proposing significant upgrades to each unit, the building and the grounds that will allow for the needed rehabilitation of the building while also preserving the long-term affordability of the asset. Northgate Preservation Urban Renewal LLC is wholly owned subsidiary of HVPG Northgate Apartments LLC. In turn, HVPG Northgate Apartments LLC is owned by Hudson Valley Property Group LLC with 95% of that ownership, owning 95% and being the management member, and HVPV2 Northgate Apartments LLC as a 5% ownership interest and an investor member. As is the case with many transactions that contain an allocation of low-income housing tax credits, there will be an investor member assuming a 99.99% ownership at the financial closing, with HVPG Northgate Apartments LLC becoming the managing member and assuming 0.01% ownership. Presently, it is anticipated that Enterprise Housing Credit Investments LLC will be the investor member of the partnership. Hudson Valley Property Group LLC was founded in 2010, based out of New York City, New York, and is an affordable housing developer with a portfolio across multiple states, including more than 8,000 units and growing, including senior, family, and mixed resident properties. Again, this project has a co-applicant. The co-applicant is Hearthstone HVPG Northgate LLC, an entity wholly owned by the Hearthstone Housing Foundation, which is a 501c3, and that will participate as a nonprofit in the project financing. Authority staff is in receipt of an IRS 501c3 determination letter for Hearthstone. Hearthstone HVPG is a disregarded entity for tax purposes and thus takes on the characteristics of its parent and therefore is a nonprofit for taxation purposes. Hearthstone HVPG will be contributing services related to the project that directly affect and serve the residents of the redevelopment project. The applicant and co-applicant have entered into a participation agreement that specifies the co-applicant's participation in the redevelopment project and evidences a commitment to providing the services previously described. The commitment encompasses the duration of the Aspire eligibility period. For everyone's benefit, I'll just note that this co-applicant has also satisfied all of the additional requirements provided more detail earlier. The total development costs are roughly $127.5 million, with project costs being roughly $103.5 million. Again, by statute, eligible project costs exclude the acquisition value of land and developer fee. Additionally, various reserves to fund interest and operating expenses jointly are excluded by rules. The applicant proposes sources for this project that include a first mortgage, low-income housing tax credit proceeds, a loan secured by the Aspire tax credit proceeds, a seller's note, project debt operating income, because it's a currently fully occupied building, bond reinvestment income from bond proceeds associated with the construction of the project, and a deferred developer fee. The acquired equity in this project equates to roughly $25.5 million. This equity consists of
low-income housing tax credit proceeds in the amount of $45.2 million and the deferred developer fee of roughly $5.5 million. This residential project, financed with a 4% low-income housing tax credit allocation, is eligible for an Aspire tax credit of 45% of project costs as a result of being located in a qualified incentive track, is not to exceed $60 million. As such, the project is eligible for an Aspire tax credit not to exceed $46,592,356, which is the lesser of $60 million and 45% of project costs. Because the project is receiving low-income housing tax credits from NJHMFA, NJHMFA's deferred fee model was used to measure the appropriate and reasonable rate of return. The total developer fee is $11.752 million, with roughly $5.5 million deferred and not fully realized until the 10th year of operations, which conforms with the HMFA rules. At the time of this recommendation, there are $1.15 billion in unallocated tax credit resources available to Aspire projects located in the southernmost counties in the state for the fiscal year. The recommendation is approval of an award up to 45% of total project costs, not to exceed $46,593,356 in Aspire tax credits based upon the financing gap illustrated by the project's actual cost of capital stack at time of commitment.
So the building is 100% affordable today?
Yeah.
So what happens to the residents during the three?
So no one gets displaced. They do this. They do the work kind of during the day, and then as they go into the units, folks get moved into a, generally they get moved in like a conference, like a community center where they have refreshments and TV and stuff. This project has a little bit more extensive remediation going on with lead paint and there's something, asbestos. So they actually create like four or five surplus units in the beginning, and then they give those people spend the night in those units for a handful of days as their units being.
So no one's working in their house.
Yeah, nobody. They don't even go into a hotel. They don't have to move anywhere. And they just lose their unit for a couple of days as it's being worked on.
Questions?
You have one of those metal blankets they give you after a marathon.
So the affordable housing comes 100% is going to stay.
Yeah. Others? Anyone on the phone? Questions? Okay, hearing none. Could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Dragon.
Second?
And find out.
Power also.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Yes. Recusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, Kevin is relieved. Thank you, Kevin. All right, we're now going to go to the New Jersey Evergreen Innovation Fund, Curtis Lee, presenting.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm pleased to present our recommendations for the designation of these first qualified venture firms under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund program. Moved into law by Governor Murphy as part of the Economic Recovery Act of 2020, with regulations approved by the Board of the Authority in April of 2022, the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund is a partnership with the private sector that raises and invests funds in high-growth New Jersey innovative companies and will increase venture capital funding available for the state's innovation ecosystem, creating the conditions necessary for entrepreneurs to succeed. Approval as a qualified venture firm, or QVF, enables each firm to apply for funding from the Innovation Evergreens Fund when they identify an eligible New Jersey business and to gain support and insight from interactions with the program's advisory board. Evaluation results and designation recommendations for the three QVF applications are presented today for approval. The program minimum requirements that must be met by venture firms prior to evaluation are to employ at least two full-time investors, each with at least 5 years of money management experience, and to have assets under management of at least $10 million. The application evaluation places a material emphasis on firms' DE&I policies and track record on such policies. Staff from the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Department independently evaluate applicants' policies. The program's evaluation model and DE&I policy framework demonstration tools are described in Appendix B of the memorandum. The applicants recommended for qualified venture firm certification based upon evaluation scoring totals that exceed minimum acceptable scores are Finn Venture Capital Management LLC, headquartered in San Francisco, California, Tech Council Ventures LLC, based in New Jersey, and Signet Healthcare Management LLC, headquartered in New York City. Overviews of each applicant are presented in Appendix A of the memorandum. Thank you for your consideration, and I welcome any questions or comments at this time.
Great job. No, not questions, just editorial. Just a reminder, this is not funding for anybody. This is essentially a membership card in the Evergreen Fund. They will come back when they have a deal that they would wish us to consider, but they're essentially pre-qualified. It's imaginable we could have...
And that deal would be a New Jersey company.
That deal, for 100% sure, would be a New Jersey company. It's imaginable you could have a venture firm seeking qualification on the same day they have a deal to bring to us. That's not the most efficient way to do it. These folks are sort of pre-qualified. They have a membership card. They'll be out able to do this. But they don't get any money today. The second thing, to the chairman's point, two of these are outside of New York. Excuse me, outside of New Jersey. One's in New York. One's in San Francisco. That's a good thing. This means more capital flowing from out-of-state investors into New Jersey, as well as an in-state frequent flyer and Tech Council Ventures. So really pleased to see uptake. I met with Finn when we were in California in January and the governor's economic trip out there. Really good excitement in Silicon Valley and Northern California in particular about this program, and I expect we'll see some more flow from out-of-state investors, which again means more money flowing into New Jersey. It's New Jersey coming. So big moment here. Again, the big three steps in the Evergreen journey, the auction, which we did in December, and help me out with that one, December, qualifying the venture firms, then qualifying the investments. We are continuing to hopscotch our way down the path to getting more venture capital flowing in New Jersey. Tim Rolliter, who I didn't mention during the earlier presentation of heroes around the Black Latino Seed Fund, that should have, was certainly one of the heroes of the Evergreen Fund, along with Curtis and Kathleen, who came up with the idea to go big here.
So this is the second stage of your hopscotch, which is identifying firm.
Correct.
Who will then bring us?
Correct. They will identify, we like a company, we think this is a good idea, we are going to invest our own money, will you match us if it's a New Jersey company? We will not be making investment decisions about the right social media app or Cure for Cancer or whatever else these guys are up to, these folks are up to.
Questions from the board? Questions on the phone? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Second motion to approve.
Second?
Robert Chimkin.
Thank you, Robert. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Thank you. Hearing none, the motion passes.
Thank you.
We're now going to move to film and digital media tax credits. Matthew.
Thank you, Chairman. The EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of two applications under the film and digital media tax credit program. One application is under the film side of the program, and the other is under the digital media tax credit program. We've received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budgets to make sure they are reasonable for industry standards. All film content has been reviewed by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission, and they recommend the approval. Total tax credits utilized across the one recommended film approval will be for over $12.2 million. While the total credits utilized under the digital side is just over $5.8 million. The first project is a digital media project. The members are asked to approve. The applicant is CNBC LLC for its 2019 digital media expenses. Based on the qualified digital media expense of over $19.4 million, we are recommending an award of just over $5.8 million. On the film side, under consideration, the application is for It Ends With Us Movies LLC, who is responsible for the production of It Ends With Us. This project includes a 2% diversity bonus, and based on over $34.3 million in qualified expenditures, we recommend an award of just over $12.2 million. Each of these projects will need its own separate vote, and happy to answer any questions.
Just one clarifying question for me.
Sure.
So the CNBC spend was in 2019.
Yes.
Yep. Could they come back to us for a 2020 and a 2020?
Yeah, they've already submitted applications for the next 2 years. Yep.
And then the movie is prospective. It hasn't been made yet, right?
For the film, there's no requirement that it is prospective. If they do submit an application before they start shooting and they get approved, they have from that day 180 days to actually start. We get projects that submit, you know, either before, in the middle of shooting, or even after. I just look at the memo.
This is the 15th of May, so Monday.
Yep, starting soon. Pending that. Might be impacted by the writer's strike, but.
True. Questions from other members of the board? Questions on the phone? So we need two separate votes here. All right, so let's vote first on the CNBC tax credit. Could I hear a motion to approve?
So moved, Angela.
Second.
I'll second.
Is that Jenny?
Yes. Sorry.
Okay, thanks, Jenny. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, that passes. The second is it ends with us, movie tax credit. Can I hear a motion to approve? Thank you. May I hear a second?
Second, Jamara Sermons.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none. That passes. Thank you. Next, we are going to loans, grants, guarantees, and investments. Michael Dealey. Good
morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Under DEP's Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund program, we have two municipal supplemental grant applications seeking approval for funding. Both municipal supplemental grant applications exceed the cumulative delegated authority approval threshold of $1.5 million. The first supplemental grant request is for the Borough of National Park in the amount of $477,266 at a project site called the Robert Hawthorne Sanitary Landfill. Prior approvals to the borough for this specific project totaled $9.1 million. The proceeds of this request in the amount of $477,266 will be used to fund investigation activities at the project site. And it's the applicant's intent upon the completion of full site remediation to redevelop the property for renewable energy generation. The second supplemental grant request is from the Borough of Somerville in the amount of $529,642 at a project site called the BDA Somerville Landfill. The project site is in a brownfield development area and is eligible for up to $5 million per year in HDSRF program funding. Prior approvals to the borough for this specific project total approximately $25.2 million, and it's the applicant's intent upon completion of this remediation as well to redevelop the property for renewable energy generation. Thank you.
And the reason we have to vote on these is because of the cumulative amount that's been allocated.
Got it. Right. About the delegated question.
And I believe we can do this as one motion?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions? Comments? Could I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you. A second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia and Treasurer. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any refusals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. We'll now move to real estate. Vice Chair Sarlo, would you like to make a few words in advance of today's discussion?
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the Real Estate Committee met on April 26, 2023 to discuss the policy for stranded assets repositioning investment. This is a very innovative. It follows along the line of the EDA's investments and other, a number of other segments of the economy. As we all know, real estate development and construction is a critical component of the state's economy, and this follows along the line. And the policy is to ask the members to approve the policy initiative as well as to approve the allocation of $25 million from the 2023 state budget for this program. So I think it's a great program. It shows the commitment of the EDA to support communities and partner with the private sector to help stimulate the economy further. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Charles. Liza Nolan.
morning.
Hi. Yes, good morning still. Here to talk about the policies for investing in and repositioning of stranded assets. As part of the fiscal year 2023 Appropriations Act, $70 million was set aside by Governor Murphy and the legislature to invest in real estate project funding, supporting various strategic economic development activities and spurring statewide economic growth. From those funds, EDA anticipates utilizing $25 million for stranded assets repositioning. The policy process that is outlined in the board memo before you is similar to other initiatives that EDA has undertaken. In particular, it's the same manner by which we set up the Strategic Innovation Centers Excellence, and that resulted in one recent action before the board for the New Jersey Innovation Hub in New Brunswick as part of the Helix project. So, stranded assets. We've seen them throughout the state, number of different properties, underutilized commercial or other properties. We would put them at least 50,000 square feet for consideration for this investment opportunity. Might include such things as vacant office parks, partially occupied retail malls, or abandoned healthcare facilities, larger buildings. They would need to be vacant or partially vacant. That would be part of our review process. It would not be vacant land. In addition to just identifying those stranded assets, there would have to be a repositioning component as part of the project. So redevelopment and reuse for a modified or different use, not just rehabbing a building, keeping the use the same. Obviously, there's some stranded element component there, so we would want to make sure that the proposed project is repositioning the property and proposing an investment that would have a positive impact in the community. The minimum project cost that we would be considering would be $25 million. So again, we're trying to be impactful as to size of the stranded asset and then the investment opportunity. The new use might include something like a commercial office or some kind of industrial manufacturing. And we would allow for mixed use development, as we've heard of those opportunities that have been occurring throughout the state. We would not be considering warehouse nor 100% residential projects, but a mixed-use project would be eligible and would include the minimum 20% affordable housing. EDA would be considering potential investment proposals that come to us from redevelopers or as staff hears about opportunities. The framework is outlined in the board memo for what are the factors that we would be considering to review and consider what investment opportunities we might undertake. So we would be looking at things such as project location, community support, how the project advances, regional strategic planning efforts or local development plans, consistency with local development plans. We would look at the qualifications and experience of the proposer and the project team, the feasibility of the project, readiness to proceed, and then the economic generation proposed by the project, such as jobs and other community factors. Out of the $25 million that is allocated through the state budget, EDA would keep 5% for the administration program fees. We would expect to invest in 2 to 3 projects. Typically, the project investment that we might undertake would be between about $8 million and $15 million, with a maximum of $15 million per investment. The investment that we would provide would not exceed 50% of the total project cost, and we would be analyzing each deal in detail. Any investment that met the criteria in the board review, the staff review, would be presented to the board in detail in a write-up for project review, approval, and board action. So before you, we are requesting that the board approve the policies for repositioning, or investing in the repositioning of the stranded assets and utilizing the $25 million from the state budget appropriation that was provided to EDA.
So again, any projects spending the 25, you would come back?
We would come back with a very detailed underwriting and review project description.
This approval would allow us to do is basically say to the world, hey, we have this pot of money. This is kind of the basket of things or the box of things we're interested in hearing proposals for. If you have a proposal, send it our way. We'll work with you. We'll structure it. The other thing I'm
would you actually see using part of the $25 million to buy an asset?
Not in total, because we won't be more than 50% of the project cost, and I don't think we want to be in the proprietary, other than the wind port. We don't want to be in the proprietary development business all that often. A reasonable person might say, why are you giving grants to companies to bail themselves out of problems that the market created for them? We're not. This is an equity investment. So we're basically saying if there's an owner of these assets, whether it's the current owner or a new owner or, you know, an owner who built the mall, and malls have had challenges, you know, that's capitalism. If we're going to help you out, we're going to be along for the ride on the equity line and be participating in the upside and get, you know, paid back or paid back more.
And you'll have to evaluate whether we think the project makes sense.
Whether there's a rational thesis or not to make money.
Yeah. Right.
But it also solves the public policy ambition of, you know, dead hotels, office parks in our suburbs. Isn't good for anybody. But there's a capitalism dimension, so we're participating in a capitalism.
The assets, it says commercial or other properties. You're only talking about private assets, right, though, not public?
Correct. For this policy.
Okay.
Mind the taxation bill.
I might have the right price. Questions? Other questions or comments? Board? Anyone on the phone? So, again, this is we're approving the policy and the circling of the $25 million subject to detailed approvals. Could I hear a motion to approve?
So moved, Sarla.
Thank you. Second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? All right, none heard. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now move to offshore wind. Kathy Juhas.
Thank you. Good morning. The members are requested to approve 5 applications and their respective grant awards for the New Jersey Offshore Wind Workforce and Skills Development Grant Challenge, totaling $3.725 million to the following applicants: Mid-Atlantic States Career and Education Center, Apex Solutions Foundation, Eastern Atlantic States Carpenters Technical College, New Jersey Environmental Justice Alliance, and Ivy Hill Neighborhood Association, and to decline all other applicants. The awards utilize funding from the July 2021 MOU with BPU to support offshore wind workforce training. This work is being pursued as part of EDA's efforts to stand up the Wind Institute for Innovation and Training. At the September 14th and November 16th, 2022 EDA board meetings, members approved the Grant Challenge, which is a grant to award funding for offshore wind workforce training. The minimum and maximum amounts for individual awards were set at $100,000 and $1 million, respectively. The Grant Challenge was open to public and nonprofit entities. All applications were required to include at least one community-based organization serving an overburdened community as defined by New Jersey's environmental justice law, either as the applicant or as a strategic collaborator. Proposals were evaluated based on 5 primary criteria, and the minimum score required to be considered for an award is 80 points, with the highest score being 100. EDA received 14 proposals, 2 did not meet the applicant eligibility requirements, 7 received a score of 80 or above, 5 received a score below 80, 5 had the highest scores and are recommended for award. I will now present those that we are recommending for approval and declination. The first one that we are approving is Mid-Atlantic State Career and Education Center. It is a CBO that will develop and implement the following training in OSHA, welding, and mechatronics in the overburdened communities of Salem County in collaboration with Salem Vocational School and County College. The budget is $1 million, and their score was 95. The second one is Eastern Atlantic State's Carpenters Technical College, which will expand its established Carpenter Apprenticeship Readiness Program to include offshore wind modules in the overburdened community of Atlantic City. This pre-apprentice program will expose participants to pile driving, millwright, and carpentry fundamentals, and students will choose one of those tracks for their apprenticeship while obtaining OSHA, process safety management, and TWIC credentials. They propose to increase participation of minority and women by 50% and 25% respectively. They will collaborate with leaders in training, a CBO based in Atlantic City. The budget is $987,124.80, and their score was 94. The next one is Apex Solutions Foundation. It is a nonprofit organization which will conduct a train-to-hire program focused on construction trades and operations specialty managers in the overburdened communities of South Amboy and Atlantic City. Participants will obtain certified associate in project management, construction professional, OSHA and TWIC credentials. APEX will be collaborating with SCORES Reentry. It is a CBO that works with individuals impacted by the criminal justice system, poverty, or substance abuse. The budget is $612,720, and their score was 94. The next one is New Jersey Environmental Justice Alliance, which is a CBO that will provide training in green construction, machinery, and electrical skills, environmental justice, and offshore wind. The participants will obtain OSHA, fall prevention, and drug and alcohol awareness credentials in the overburdened communities of Newark and the surrounding areas. They will be partnering with Social Synergy, a private workforce development organization. The budget is $700,000, and their score was 93. The last one is Ivy Hill Neighborhood Association, which is a CBO that will develop and implement a pre-apprenticeship math and verbal upskill program in the overburdened communities of Newark. Participants will be introduced to careers in the offshore wind industry. They will enable participants to pass the math and verbal exams required for admission to many apprenticeships and skills training programs. They will work with Technoforce, a private workforce development organization, to provide the training. Ivy Hill's initial budget brought the total awards over $3.725 million, which is our funding cap. We reached out to them about amending their scope for a budget of $425,155.20. They amended their budget and scope of work. Their proposal was reevaluated by the scoring committee, and it scored high enough to be recommended for an award. Their score was 90. The applicants that met the minimum score of 80 but were not selected due to funding constraints are Rowan College of South Jersey and Stockton University. The applicants that did not meet the minimum score of 80 are Rowan University, New Jersey State Veterans Chamber of Commerce, Hunterdon County Vocational Technical School, Mars Community Development Corporation, and NAN Newark Tech World. Upon EDA approval, EDA will enter into grant agreements with each of the five awarded applicants, and I will take any questions at this time. Thank you.
One thing I'd add, I think this is an extraordinary program, an extraordinarily important program, really good mix of partners in the awardees geographically. We've got environmental justice groups really proud to have carpenters represent the trades and the building trades, so a really good mix of who we're working with, where we're working, how we're focusing on offshore wind skill development here. So kudos to the team for a rigorous application process.
On the, agree with everything Tim said, and some of these folks accept, that we're familiar with, I just wanted to offer up that some of these folks who are maybe new to this process, we're happy to work with them on the local workforce on board, the one-stops, because finding the folks to go to the training programs is often the hardest part. This, anybody can have a training program. About finding them to come into it and having a job at the other end of it. I'm just wondering what kind of metrics are being used to you know, to judge the milestones they put into their own applications.
Well, each one had their own metrics. We certainly did ask them to provide information on how they would recruit and how their marketing would be laid out. I do not remember them off the top of my head, how they were going to initially reach out to the communities for each five of them. I do have my paperwork here. It varies. It depends. Most of them were the CBOs that were going to be doing the outreach to the communities. Off the top of my head.
Well, I was just going to add that in terms of recruitment, a lot of the CBO partners were directly involved in that, and then each of the applicants included in there sort of their metrics for ongoing evaluation. That was part of our evaluation process, so looking at specific metrics of people served, people completing the program, and job placements were that was part of the program.
Thanks. Other questions, comments from the board?
I do. The pre-apprenticeship program. Is that for the construction side or the maintenance side once they're out in the water?
you have an idea of that?
Are you referring to the Eastern Atlantic State Carpenters Technical College? There are two pre-apprenticeship programs, which is the Technical College and Ivy Hill has a pre-apprenticeship program.
Is it construction or operations?
Construction or operations. So for the Eastern Atlantic State Carpenters Technical College, they are running their typical pre-apprenticeship program, which provides various skills, and do have a little more detail in my notes here on that. Their training includes interview skills, being successful in construction through attitude, character, and ethics, working with tools and material, shop skills and safety, construction math, measurement and beyond, and they will also focus on marine training and diving, and they will learn basic welding and basic rigging skills, as well as being able to obtain OSHA 10 and the process safety management and the TWIC card in their pre-apprenticeship program. And then for Ivy Hill, it's mostly just improving people's math and verbal skills as well as learning about offshore wind.
Right. Do we have an idea of how many jobs it's going to create, whether it's on the construction or the operations side?
That I do not know.
Offshore wind broadly?
Yeah.
So our workforce assessment report that we did last year looked at for New Jersey's projection for offshore wind. This was for the 7.5 gigawatt goal of 20,000 jobs in the 2030. That does include sort of the spin-off jobs and induced jobs in the larger economy. But a pretty significant one in construction, manufacturing, professional services, and O&M.
Mr. Chairman, it's Jenny Bauer. I recognize that we're talking about workforce and skill development grants, but a somewhat related question, which has gotten a lot of media attention, I'm wondering if anybody could answer with regard to the concern over a lot of whales and dolphins that have been killed, where we're considering or putting wind turbines. Has there been any work and studies on that? And I know we've addressed it before, but for my benefit, maybe for others, could you, is there anybody there who could give a little more clarity on what the true story is?
Thanks, Jenny. I appreciate the question. Certainly tons of media and other attention to that, really unfortunate set of circumstances of a multi-year increase in whale and dolphin strandings, not just this year, but over a period going back several years. I'm not a scientist, but I'm going to quote both federal and state experts on this, and Commissioner Lazzaretta, maybe Liz, you want to help me out if I screw this up, but who does a great job doing this. There is no evidence. There is zero evidence linking offshore wind activities off the coast of New Jersey or anywhere else to this uptick, this multi-year uptick in strandings. For everyone's awareness, there are zero wind turbines that have been installed and constructed off the coast of New Jersey, zero. There are some exploratory activities going on. Those exploratory activities use the same sonar that commercial fishery operations have used for generations and are believed to not even be, the word is, hearable by whales and other large marine mammals. And so there is no evidence linking offshore wind activities, and there hasn't been any construction. It's impossible to link construction. There hasn't been any, and there is no evidence linking exploratory activities to any of these very, very sad situation. I'm going to say the whales guys do, but there's no evidence at all linking offshore wind to it.
Oh, that's good to hear, Tim, and hopefully the media will also draw on that those studies as well, because you haven't, at least to my recollection, I haven't been able to see much of that. But thank you. I appreciate that.
Hi, it's Aisha. I just had a quick question to jump back to the workforce programs. I only heard about industry certifications, I think, in two of the programs. Is that accurate, other than OSHA training? Is that accurate? And if so, was there any rationale to which program kind of aligned, I'm assuming, based upon, the hard skills and the technical skills that they're leaning into. But just wondering what the rationale or discussion was around which program received or providing industry certification, and if that was part of the evaluation.
So there are four programs that are providing various industry certifications. Four are providing OSHA certification, whether it's OSHA 10 or OSHA 30. Some are providing process safety management credentials, transportation worker identification credentials. There are two that are providing the TWIC credentials. We have another one that is providing a certificate in associate in project management construction. So there are a variety of different credentials, and that was not a requirement for the grant to have specific certificates and credentials.
Okay, that was going to be my other question, if that was a requirement. Thank you.
You have a total of, I think, of 20,000 jobs, you said, anticipated for this initiative.
So not tied to this particular set of grants. So the workforce assessment that we did uses the National Renewable Energy Laboratory JEDI model to project sort of specific job creation. And so through that analysis, we identified that there would be 20,000 jobs related to offshore wind activity by 2030. The grants here are, you know, a continuation of our efforts to train the workforce in the specific jobs that are needed, but we will certainly be coming back with more workforce training programs. This is, you know, not the only ones that will be required to meet that need.
I was curious about the ratio for skills trades, men and woman, to an apprentice. So if you're doing training, obviously everyone, you know, the whole workforce can't be. I'm just wondering about the ratio. Is that set by the bargaining agreement with the union, or is there some type of setting within?
Yeah, so for the, you know, for construction-related jobs, those are, you know, set by the, you know, working with Department of Labor and set by, you know, specific bargaining agreements. So that's not set, you know, for the offshore wind industry. That's separate from anything else.
Any other questions, comments?
Motion to approve, Angela.
Anyone on the phone? Can I hear a second?
Antoine Johnson.
Thank you. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposals, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Jonathan Kennedy on Windport infrastructure communication expenditure.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll keep these as brief as I can so we can finish on time. Members are asked to approve a marketing and communications budget for the New Jersey Windport project, $0.5 million. The request for dedicated communications funding is a direct response to mounting community media and industry interest in the project. Funding will be used for a broad range of activities which jointly will help to build community awareness and understanding of the project, as well as the opportunities that exist for small, medium-sized businesses, as well as workers. Upgrading the Windport website will be a priority initiative alongside community events, forums, and other kind of like initiatives. Staff will use the $200 million fiscal 2022 appropriation in order to cover these costs. Happy to take any questions.
Questions, comments?
Could you find another word, zero, Jonathan? You're a brilliant person.
What was it before? No.
Not.
Strictly from my lexicon.
No questions heard. Can we take a motion to approve?
Robert Simpkin.
Thank you, Robert. Second.
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, abstentions, or recusals? All right, the motion passes. Second, Jonathan, on the request for construction funding.
Members are asked to approve up to $6 million in additional expenditure for Windport construction, with funds to be used for a test pile program on Parcel B. This is a refresh. Parcel B is a 110-acre parcel owned by EDA on which phase two of the project will be constructed. Parcel B permits have been lodged. They've not been attained. We anticipate getting permit approval both federally and state sometime around October of this year. But we are accelerating the fabrication of the test piles in order to realize savings and in order to localize job opportunities. Specifically, the piles will be fabricated at the subcontractor's Oldmans Creek facility. That's the facility we've been using to build the piles for Parcel A. The piles that we're using for Parcel A are due to complete, and really what we're doing by accelerating is getting that facility to fabricate the test piles. It's 36 before they kind of demobilize, before they take away some of that equipment. And again, that results in savings for the state, and it also helps us to localize some of those jobs because that facility is in Oldmans Creek. Results from the test pile program are a critical input to Parcel B detailed design. A bit like lenders, engineers are extremely risk averse. And though we've kind of gone through this process on Parcel A, we do need to do it again on Parcel B just in case there are differences in terms of geotechnical, geospatial, et cetera, that they need to assess to inform the design. Staff will return to the board to approve funding for the balance of Parcel B construction once Parcel B design is progressed and once funds are secured. So to be clear, this is just for the test pile program, which is an input to the design. It isn't for the development of the parcel. Staff will use proceeds from the January 2023 bond issuance to cover these costs. Approval of this request will increase total board approvals to date for the Winport project to approximately $517 million. I'm happy to take any questions.
One friendly amendment to Jonathan's recitation. The facility in Oldmans Creek was actually set up by our subcontractor for our project. It is a union shop, paying prevailing wage and all that. So they're supporting our project, as they should.
And just to be clear, Jonathan, the idea is they construct the piles, but they're not actually installed.
They're installed, but they're installed for testing purposes. So they're fabricated, installed, and then they basically stress test them.
36 is 5-ish percent of the total piles we'll need? 2-ish percent? How many piles will we need total for Parcel B?
The design hasn't been resolved for Parcel B. If we look at Parcel A, in Parcel A we've got approximately 1,850 piles. Yeah, so they basically install them, different lengths, test them, and then it helps them inform, you know, how many piles, what distance apart, what circumference, what length, etc.
So the idea is to use the existing fabrication facility before they shut it down.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Which we think saves us money in the long run.
And helps to keep those jobs in Oldmans Creek. Yeah.
Questions? Comments? May I hear a motion to approve?
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Commissioner? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, again, hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Jonathan. Bruce Saella on our in-house system. I'm going to leave it at that.
First, I was optimistic on my notes to take this morning, but now we're already in afternoon.
That will be even quicker. So before you request to enter into a contract with Microsoft for not to exceed $2 million, the contract will be the replacement for our current incentive data management system, which internally is known as IDMS. Quick background, the IDMS system is where all of our major job portfolio incentives come into. So think of BEEP, think of BRAG, think of our GROW program. We have about, I think last year it was about $510 million worth of tax incentives that came through this IDMS system. As you can imagine, this is a self-developed system kind of internally. As technology has changed over the years, almost monthly, at this point daily, we want to kind of utilize a better, more up-to-date system that can do a lot more AI and machine-type learning that will make us as an organization more efficient. We'll get tax credits out on the street quicker, but at the same time do the rigorous reviews that we can. Excuse me, that we know we have to do. So I'm happy to take any questions. I know that was quick, but it's a request to build on the Microsoft Power platform for $2 million. And we'll be able to utilize this by the end of the year. So for our next tax credit submissions, we should have the new platform up and running.
Motion to approve.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Bruce. Tim?
Take no more than 45 minutes to go through these memoranda. You have six delegated board memoranda in your pack. I won't even say any more about them other than there are six. Happy to answer any questions. They are a memorialization of a ton of work that happens between these meetings that doesn't come here for consideration but lives under the processes and policies that you've promulgated over the years, and the team works very hard on them when we're not in these board meetings. So thank you for that.
Good. No more?
Chapter 2. Tim, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Since you're short on your 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Under budget. I see Bed Bath & Beyond on here. Can you comment what, the relevance of it being on here in the context of the bankruptcy filing by Bed Bath?
Yeah, I don't see exactly where they are. There they are. So they have received, they were approved for a significant amount of money. I don't know if that's the problem. Stop me. They have received a total of $8,000, and they're well out of their compliance period, for, even if we are not able to get that back. So our hooks into them are virtually non-existent. I believe this was in connection with this was sort of customary approvals in connection with the very sad situations going on with the estate, where they have to ask for consent for various things.
So the $8.5 million is...
Even if that means the approved award, Brad, Bruce, help me out. How much they got? $80,000, something like that.
Yeah, they've gotten less than $10,000. It's the minimum, the amount of money that they receive. We've noticed them, made them aware that all of the transactions that have taken place could impact their award. All of the years that they've certified were previous years, but they still have a commitment to stay in the state. So, as we learn more from all of the layoffs and everything that has that. We learn as we, go through this process with reward notices and things like that. We noticed that, make them aware. This was just a consent that was on the books that we just did under delegated. But the amount that is going to Bed Bath & Beyond is the minimum to that.
Good question, though. Okay. Now we're going to go to the public comment section. I'd like to open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'd like to ask Danielle Esser to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Maybe in the interest of expediency, you can ask and see if there's anybody on the phone or in person who wants to speak, and then if not, I will save everybody me reading this whole public comment policy.
Efficiency in government here, if you like. Anybody in the room?
Lois, can you ask? Can you read the prompt and ask if there's anybody on the phone who wants to provide any public comment, please?
Certainly, ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment, please.
And Lois, if anybody comes up... there is somebody who, if anybody comes up to speak, I will read the public comment policy before you open their line. Okay, I'm seeing a questioner who's going to be asking a question, so I'll just go ahead and share the public comment policy so that folks are aware. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. The public comment policy is available on the NJEDA website. The speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority, and staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A speaker may not speak more than once during the same public comment period and may submit any comments, documents, or materials attached to an email forward to staff. Thank you. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time. Okay, please go ahead and open the speaker's line. Thank you.
Very good. It's the line of Darren McReeve. You may go ahead.
Hi. My name is Darren McReeve. I'm calling from White's Windows. We're located in Ramsey, New Jersey. And I first want to express my support for what you guys are all doing. I also want to give you a little feedback that I've experienced. So my company, White Windows, We manufacture high-performance windows, which help lower the heating load and cooling load for buildings, and we sell a lot into affordable housing across the state and across the country. So we started this company in 2017, and we've grown it tremendously, and we're creating jobs here in the state, and it's part of the green economy. We recently applied for the manufacturing grant for new equipment. We wanted to expand our ever-growing production, and we were pre-approved. So we filled out a whole application, pre-approved, and then I got a letter or an email saying, you know, press this button on such date, the application will be open. And as a small business, I'm out, you know, doing sales and having meetings. And so I said, okay, the application is open at that time. I happened to be away at the time for a meeting. I'll fill it out later. By the time I got back to it, just a few days later, the application closed because it was a first come, first served basis, which seems to be, you know, I don't know if that's a, seems to be, in my point of view, seems to be the wrong way to go about, you know, distributing funds. It should be based on the merits of the application. I'd be happy to have lost the ability to get these funds if the people said, oh, well, you know, there are other manufacturers and doing other things that are more worthy than you. But does it, you know, have it be the same? The same way people line up on Black Friday outside of Walmart, doesn't seem to be the right path, I think, for such an important thing. Especially, I think we're probably the ideal candidate for such funds, being that we're in manufacturing, wanted to increase our capacity, building doing high performance windows. One of the only companies in the country focused on these type of high-performance windows and making them into affordable housing, which is 70% of what we do. So I just wanted to give you that feedback and see if there's any path forward to us being able to reapply for those funds and what other programs would be applicable for us as we try to grow this company and grow the amount of jobs we can in the state of New Jersey.
Hey, it's Tim Sullivan. First of all, thanks for taking the time to call in and provide that feedback. And second, congrats on the success of the business. Third, sorry that you had the experience you did. You know, first come, first serve is not perfect. If we went to the route of evaluating sort of if we went based on sort of merit, if you think it takes us a while to get applications approved when it's first come, first serve, it would take a very, very, very long time. So it's a trade-off between efficiency and you know, I hear you on the meritorious piece. The good news is we'd be happy to follow up with you and talk about other ways we might be able to help. The manufacturing voucher program was funded by an appropriation in last year's budget. Governor Murphy included in his budget proposal in February additional funding for that program. So somebody from the legislature has to say about it. I'm optimistic we'll be back for a further round of that sometime in the, you know, fall, probably, if I'm looking at Kathleen and trying to say something stupid. I was almost said late summer, but I'm going to say fall. So there will be, I'm optimistic there will be more funding available this year, this calendar year.
And would that be something that we'd have to reapply, or we're on a waiting list now? I mean, one other thing I forgot to mention, it was that, it wasn't that when I did have to finally press the button there was no like additional information. There was like really no value to that second application process, which also seemed, you know, it wasn't like they needed additional information. It was just verify everything I said in the first one where I was pre-approved was still accurate. And so, I mean, you guys did take the time to review the merit of the pre-approval.
So we're happy to follow up with you on the circumstances of whether you'll be on a wait list or not. I'm not sure we made those determinations yet because we haven't gotten the funding yet to make those determinations, but we're going to do our best to make it user-friendly for anybody who's been impacted by it. But appreciate the comments and happy to follow up with you on other ways we might be able to help with other programs. Not immediately spring to mind. MVP is a great program, but happy to follow up with you.
Great.
Great. And we have no other commenters. You may continue.
All right. Thank you. With no additional comments, I'd like to thank everybody for your participation today, and I would entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting. All right, thank you. Thank you, everybody. This concludes our meeting. Thank you, operator.
Thank you. You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.